Today's reading is from Isaiah chapter 7, verses 10 to 16. And if you're following in the church Bibles, that can be found on page 692. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz, "Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights." But Ahaz said, "I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test." Then Isaiah said, "Hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of humans? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and will call him Emmanuel. He will be eating curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste."
Thank you. We have been working through the last few weeks some different passages, looking at this idea of small wonder and looking at the wonder that Jesus' arrival is. And as we've been looking through, we've been going through various different topics. We looked initially at Isaiah 2, about how we have a wonderful plan. And we talked about our fears and our hopes, didn't we, about coming up to the Christmas period. We talked about the wonderful news, the coming of the wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And we watched a short video. In the first week, we saw a chess match. And the second week, we saw a small baby sculpture. Do you remember in Trafalgar Square? Made out of a block of granite. Last week, Wayne shared about wonderful work. And remember, we had a little video about a butterfly. And how even the small things God's amazing at. Well, today, we're looking at, we're going back a little bit in Isaiah, to Isaiah 7, and looking at wonderful to meet you. And we're going to reflect a little bit about that encounter with Jesus that we can have through Christmas. I don't know about you, but I have learned over many years the importance of the small piece. Have you ever come across that sort of that life lesson? When you get to the end of a Lego model and there's a piece left over. Oh no, my space door doesn't open because this is the thing that makes it open. Oh, what a disaster. Or you might have had, as an adult, I've come across the same thing. You think, hey, look at me. I'm DIY Simon. I can do this IKEA furniture. It's easy. Follow the instructions. Why is there a bit left? Why doesn't the door open? Oh, I left the hinge out. Oh, I've got the spring. Or even recently, this one wasn't my fault, but have you ever had your car lie to you? Have you had that? Yeah? My car doesn't often lie to me. It's a very helpful car, my car. It'll say, bing, side door open. You think, oh, I haven't checked my side door. Bing! Your petrol's running out, and then it will go in amber, then it will go bing bing! It really is running out, you've got 79 miles left. Well, Kate and I were driving up to York for Kate's birthday, and we're driving along, and suddenly this bing! Bonnet open. I don't think it's blooming, well, no, I can see it's shut. What do you mean bonnet open? And I'm thinking, well, that's the bonnet, isn't the boots at the back? I'm looking, is the bonnet open? Is it about to become open? So we're driving along, okay, fine, that's fine. It goes off after a little while. And then 30 seconds later, bing, bonnet open. It's not open. So we get to York, think, oh, that's very odd. And then notice a few other things aren't quite working. The windscreen wipers are working at the front, but not the back. Try and open the window. That's not working either. Bit cold here. Put on the fan. Oh, no. And being a man who can't, I rang the AA. And after a little wait of about 2 hours, a really nice guy turned up. And I'm thinking, oh, it's going to cost a fortune. This could be really expensive. The windscreen wiper's gone. The washer's gone. The windows won't open. The heater won't work. This is going to be problematic. So he comes in. Hello, what's the matter there, sir? I said, well, I explained. He said, oh, let's have a look. And I had a look at the fuse box. Oh, you all knew, didn't you? Yeah. And he said, oh, it might be this. The fuse has come out the bracket. And then, bing, everything works. Windscreen wiper's going. It's all fantastic. And I said, I'm really sorry for the trouble of calling you out. And he said, oh, not a problem at all. That was a nice, easy one. And he spent the next 10 minutes in his van having a cup of tea. He was very happy about it. But a small thing can make a big difference. My fuse, or your fuse in your cars, if it's not in just the right place, you can't do things. And today we're going to look at that wonder, that amazing thing of a small thing, a newborn baby, but how important that can be. I mentioned a few weeks ago that the context of this to Ahaz is the pressure that he is feeling as the king of Judah from the Assyrian Empire. And as you can see, like the Babylonians that followed, and then the Greeks that followed, and the Romans that followed, the Assyrian Empire was expanding at this time. And I mentioned to you last time that the kingdom of Israel had been split into two. And because we're going back a little bit, we're at that point where the kingdom is in two. 10 tribes are in the north, calling themselves Israel, and 2 tribes are in the south, named Judah. And Ahaz is one of the kings that Isaiah prophesies to, one of the kings of Judah. And the start of chapter 7 tells us a little bit about what Ahaz's problems are. Because Ahaz has problems. Politicians today will tell us that they have problems. And Ahaz had them too. This was his problem, it says in Isaiah 7. When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem. That's where Ahaz's capital is. But they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim. So the heart of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. Now you have to be a bit aware that much like people get nicknames. I had a friend who was called Woody, and I never realized for a long time his real name wasn't Woody, because that would have been funny, because his name was Julian, but he didn't like Julian, so they called him Woody. Long story. But the same is true in some of the names that the Bible gives to different nations and different places. So to explain it to you in this way, there is Assyria, which has this fantastic ruler, Tilgath-Pileser III. He has begun to move into the west, to look on this map and to think, actually, what a great place that is. That Israel, it's got trade routes through it. It's got access to the coast. They're fairly small countries. They'll be easily got rid of. So there's Assyria moving to under the west. And there's the king of Israel, the northern kingdom, Remaliah, which is called Ephraim here in the passage I've just read, because the king was an Ephraimite, descended to one of the sons of Joseph, Ephraim, and the king of Rezin of Aram, which we would call today Syria. So you have a big empire trying to expand, and two of the smaller nations decide to come in together, and they decide to try and fight. And Ahaz's problem in Judah is, what do I do? If I don't join Israel and this other country to fight the Assyrians, then Israel and this other country are going to invade me. But if I do join the northern kingdom of Israel and this other country and we lose the Assyrians, well, the Assyrians are going to invade me. Heads I lose, tails you win. He's stuck. If he sides with his neighbours, Israel, he'll probably get wiped out by the Assyrians. If he sides with the Assyrians, then his neighbours, Israel, will probably invade him. He's in this lose-lose situation that actually is not uncommon for politicians, but also can be common for us sometimes. Have you ever been in that situation where there seems no win? There are two options, and you're being forced to decide which is the least worse. Maybe you need more money, but you can't get more work. What do you do? Maybe you need more support for your children, but you can't find it. Or more support for your older parents, but you can't find it. You can give the time to them, but then you can't give the time to others or to yourself. Maybe you need support yourself, because you're giving all your effort to someone else. But if you give yourself some me time, they miss out on what they need. Or maybe you want to be involved in a community action or involved in a community, but no one will invite you. These are all situations where there seems often no way out. And that's what King Ahaz is facing. What does he do? I'm sure all his advisors had advice, but it would all have been unhelpful. So God sends this message to Isaiah. He sends this really fantastic message to say, you think you've got two options. Go this way or go that way. But actually, there is a third option. Oh, I'm obviously not pressing this the right way today. Here we go. And he says this. Be careful. Keep calm. Don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two surrounding stubs of firewood. God's third option to King Ahaz is, don't join with the Assyrians. Don't join with Israel and Aram. Turn to me, God says. I will be the person to protect you. Make an alliance, not with them, but increase your alliance with me. There's that fantastic sense there, isn't there? I've heard it once said, if the outlook is not good, try the uplook. And that's exactly what God is saying. He's saying, actually, you need to trust me. I can look after you if you come along and do what I say and follow me. There's a lovely phrase there, isn't there? Don't be afraid. And it's one of the phrases that really occurs time and time again in the Bible. You might know your own thoughts of where they come. But when Moses was telling Joshua, you're going to take over from me, he said this, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. And when Moses is gone and Joshua's about to enter the promised land, God says to Joshua, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Or Psalm 23, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. My rod and your staff, they comfort me. Or the words, of course, said to Mary by the angel, fear ye not, do not be afraid. And in addition to those words, that sense of God saying, actually your fears are different when I am there. There are some other words that are also said. Be careful, keep calm, as well as don't be afraid, and do not lose heart. I find those really interesting four things to say, because they do sort of unpick a little bit how we can sometimes react when things are really difficult. I'm hoping for you that that isn't now, but you'll all know what it's like when things just get too much, when things are really difficult, and we can react in a number of ways. And these four things remind us that some of those ways cannot be very helpful. I love God saying to Ahaz, be careful. I have a friend, Fred, and he's French. And I don't know a great deal of French. I love French. I'd love to know it better. But there are certain phrases that I learnt from Fred. None of them swear words. You're okay. Don't worry. But one of them is the phrase doucement. And I know the word doucement because he used to say it a lot. So he had his children, Alice, his older Alice and Hélène, and he'd say something incomprehensible in French. And they'd say, doucement Alice, Hélène, doucement. Huh? And I said to him one day, what does that mean? He said, oh, it means carefully. It means take care. So when they were playing around and messing around, doucement, when they were doing this, doucement. He said, doucement so much, I learnt it. Fantastic. And that's what God is saying. Be careful. Because actually when time is difficult, when things are hard, we can be reckless. We can do things in the spur of the moment that actually we shouldn't do. That recklessness that comes from desperation, true. We think it will make it better, but it won't make it worse. The classic example in TV dramas, of course, is the gambler. The gambler who has almost lost all of their money. And they're sitting there thinking, what do I do? What do I do? Well, how am I going to tell my family I lost the money? And they think, a one last go. And out comes the car keys. I'll bet my car on this. And think, I'm going to win this money. And invariably, they lose their car. And they not only have to tell their family they lost their money, they have to walk home to do it. When we're desperate, we often do desperate things. Ahaz was considering joining with the Assyrians and becoming their vassal. Why would you do that? Be careful. Because we all know once you go with a bigger empire, you slowly get absorbed into it. So God says to him, be careful. It's not the time to be wild and to be difficult. Keep calm. Do you ever panic? I must admit, driving along at 65 miles an hour on a motorway when my bonnet is about to come up, I was a bit panicky. You know, is this a warning light? It's going to happen and the bonnet's going to fly up in my face. I'm going to have to drive by faith, not by sight. Now, that's very Christian, but I'm not sure I really want to do it. But Ahaz is probably panicking. And when we are in difficult situations, we often get wound up and we get very desperate to do things. And we say things and we're involved in things. And Ahaz is told not just to be careful, to think it through, but to be calm. To stop. To pray. To listen to God. To look in His Word and get His direction. And sometimes when times are really hard, we lose heart. It'll never get better. God will never answer my prayer. No one will ever understand. It'll always be like this. I'm sure Ahaz was thinking that. How can you win with a massive empire on one side and your closest relatives wanting to attack you on the other? It would be very easy to lose heart. Instead, God told him not to lose heart. And I love that phrase. Because of these two smouldering stubs of firewood. If you're going to insult someone, let's go, you know, you think you're a great two nations, but you're just little short stubs of firewood. You're not even a beam or a tree. You are nothing. And actually, that was true. God could make it so. So if we are in a desperate place, if we are in a difficult time, remember those four phrases. Be careful. Do nothing out of immediate response, immediate reaction. Be calm. Listen to what God's saying. Don't be afraid. You're not alone. You have friends, family, church, and ultimately God. And do not lose heart because things can change. And often my experience, and maybe your experience too, is when we give God time, when we get God involved in the situation, He speaks through a Bible verse perhaps, or the words of another. Or He opens our eyes to something, a new opportunity, a new way of doing things, a new reflection. It might be a poem that a Christian has written that is helpful. It might be what someone prays on a Sunday morning. They didn't know I needed that prayer, but they've just prayed what I needed to hear. But unless we stop, look, listen, and still ourselves, it's harder for God to speak. Ahaz, too, is going to get a sign. And he would have known in the past, God has shown amazing signs to His people. Remember the pillar of cloud and fire that led the people out of Egypt and into freedom. How amazing would that sign be? How can you doubt that God is amazing when it's there at night and there in the day? What about the parting of the seas or the crossing of the Jordan? These are amazing things, aren't they? Things to remember, to hold on to say, well, we know God exists because of this. Or the defeat of a giant by a little boy with a slingshot. That's a miracle you wouldn't forget soon. But this time, the miracle is tiny. Like that tiny Lego piece or the fuse in my car. It's hard to see. It's hard to know, but it makes all the difference. And that's because as a little baby will be born, This isn't a grand event for all to see. It will happen in a stable where no one much there. Yeah, the shepherds will see and the kings will arrive after a time. But it wasn't a grand event. There wasn't a massive fanfare. There wasn't a notice on the outside the gates of Buckingham Palace type of thing. This is going to be a tiny event that has astronomical and cosmic consequences. It's a different birth. Yes, it's like every child is born, but this child will become Jesus. This child will be born from a virgin. This will be God with us, Emmanuel. As Matthew in the start of his gospel says, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said to the prophet, which is Isaiah. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel. A tiny person with a huge purpose, a small wonder. And that's what we do at Christmas. We spend time reflecting on what that small wonder is. Whether our outlook is good or bad, Jesus changes everything. Because through him, we can have an encounter with God. We're going to watch a short clip of a video now that talks a little bit about the artist Nick Fiddin-Green and how he has tried to enable people to encounter God through his sculptures.
Artist Nick Fiddin-Green is known around the world for his immense and beautiful sculptures of horses' heads. But in his most recent exhibition here at the Sladmore Gallery, he turns his gaze to something far deeper, the face of Christ. For over 40 years, Nick has wrestled with clay, bronze and faith, exploring in his sculptures themes of suffering, redemption and divine acceptance. He says, "The face of Christ is an attempt for me to convey in my work or that he conveys in my heart." We all send messages through our work, through the way we live, speak, create, serve. What does our daily work say about who we follow, who we worship, and what's in our hearts? Nick begins each piece with a bag of clay, a raw material. He then asks himself a raw question. What did Christ look like in that moment? In this instance, that moment on the cross. And then as he finishes a piece, he asks himself, so what am I going to do about it? That later question lingers. What does my work say about my heart as I wash dishes, decorate the house, prepare for Christmas? What message am I sending to those who experience my efforts? Nick doesn't tell people what to see. He simply says, come and have a look at this. And they do. And many of those who have gazed upon the face of Christ in his work see the same thing. Acceptance. That's what Nick saw himself as he sculpted the face of Christ in this piece. You're all accepted the way you are. And so he simply named this piece Acceptance. Any disciple who experiences such an encounter begins a lifelong journey of becoming more like the one who has so wonderfully accepted them. Nick's work is shaped not just by clay, but by a life marked by suffering. He's faced the challenges of both cancer and addiction. Our work is shaped and cultivated by who we are and the experiences we've been through. God has a way of bringing wonder out of our wounds. When you look into the face of Christ, it makes you wonder, what did the first visitors to the manger see in the face of the baby Jesus? What did the woman at the well see? What did the woman caught in adultery see? What did Zacchaeus see when he sat across from Jesus as a guest in his home? What did Peter see after he denied knowing Jesus? Grace-filled eyes? And what did Mary, his mother, see as she nursed Jesus and watched him grow? Whatever she saw caused her to ponder the wonder in her heart. What do you see? this Advent, may our work, our words, our actions, our presence reflect the truth that we have discovered for ourselves, that it is wonderful to meet Jesus. May we all be sculptors of grace, shaping moments of love and welcome this Christmas. May we say with our lives, come and have a look at this.
So as we enter the last few days of Advent, as Christmas approaches, let us, like Mary, spend time pondering who Jesus is. Let us learn from his life. Let his voice, as we hear it through the Gospels, shape us. Whether our situations are good or bad, whether we are in, the outlook is fine or it's not so good, let us enable God to help us in those situations. And if you are in a tough time, I'd encourage you, be careful, keep calm, do not be afraid, do not lose heart. God is there with you and he will help you through it. Let's pray together. The writer of Hebrews says this, "So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me?" And Lord, for those in times of trouble, bring them respite. Be their Lord in that situation. And for all of us, Lord, as we approach Christmas Day, help us to look in the face of Jesus. Help us to open our hearts to you. Help us to ponder, to learn, to be shaped like that clay, to seek to be more like that wonderful child, that wonderful creation, our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.